on that church, yeah. It's the 26. Panye taeva majananta shutpanye vya pashate tepi chati taranti eva mitum shuti parayanaha. Translation for again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death responsibly. Again, there are those who are kayam chaksus militam jena tasmai shi gurave namaha shi chaitanya manavistam shapitam jena bhutale swayam upakarama yadadati sa parantikam shi krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shi adaitikaradha shiva sri gaura bhaktavinda.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Your father told us that that was his qualification, that he liked to hear. And there was one incident especially when there was a prikram in the Gaudiya Math in Vrindavan somewhere, and the announcement was made that those who wanted, this will be the last day if you want to go to see this holy place, or others can stay and Guru Maharaj will give class. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada stayed, and most of the devotees went, they wanted to go on prikramas. So then when somehow Srila Bhaktisiddhanta recognized Srila Prabhupada, he said, yes, I've marked this boy. He likes to hear. So Srila Prabhupada told us that was his qualification, because he liked to hear. Then when he became mature, you can say, then he was expert at speaking. Shravanam Kirtanam. First we hear, then we chant. And this is the process. The price, there's always some price for everything. This is the price, the eagerness to hear. So this verse I was thinking is very appropriate for us, because we have no spiritual knowledge, but somehow Prabhupada attracted us to hear from him. That was all his mercy. He was so attractive and inviting, and we somehow became captivated. I remember once in New Vrindavan, we were there in the early days, it was cold, and a desolate place out at the old farm, and Robert was upstairs and in that little building. And we were all there, and he said, I have hypnotized you. And, yes, you must be hypnotized. Otherwise, why are you coming out to this desolate place? So many young boys and girls. So that somehow Prabhupada hypnotized us. But it wasn't like the hypnotism. The ordinary hypnotism means that there's, some dulling. You become less aware of everything else and just of the hypnotist or whatever it is he's saying, his voice and so on. You go into a trance. But Prabhupada hypnotized us in another way, that we became more aware. We became more aware of everything. But still, we became so aware that we realized that this person wasn't an ordinary man. I remember I had that realization after just having some association with Srila Prabhupada in London, 1969. I was giving massage. And of course, we were a little cynical, coming from the material side. And I was thinking, this person, what is this person? And I remember the one time I was looking at him, I was trying to pierce in, find out what's behind this person. And he kind of saw me looking at him, and he looked back and he said, yes. But then I had an opportunity to associate with him intimately for some time, and giving massage every day. And then I really realized that this person was worshipable. That there was nothing, there was no... Because we had never met anybody like that, right? We always see our teacher, movie star or hero, Mickey Mantle, somebody was my hero, but then he got alcoholic and he was chasing women and stuff. So nobody was a hero, really, but we were all looking for someone like that who can really show some all the wonderful qualities and we can be happy to follow. Because this is our nature. Nichyo nichyanam chaitanam chaitanam. Where our nature is to follow. Nobody's really a leader except Krishna. Krishna's the only leader. No one is equal to him or greater than him. He's everyone's leader. So we want to, he's in our heart, we want to follow him, but we don't know how because we're bewildered here in the material world. So Prabhupada came and he clearly told us, yes, I'm the leader. He wasn't bashful about taking the position. Although he was very humble in his own right. in his own person. But when he came to preaching, he was very bold, and he would say, I'm the one, you should come and follow me. Just like Christ was saying, I'm the only way. Same role. Christians, of course, have it wrong. They think he's God. And that came up in our early ISKCON, too, 1970. Were you there? In New Vrindavan, they were starting to say, Prabhupada is God. And I remember thinking, well, it was a big Istagosti, and the sannyasis were there, just newly made sannyas. And they were preaching to us, Prabhupada is God. And I said, well, what about that blue boy? And they said, well, how do you know about him? I said, well, Prabhupada, you see? They were just forcing us to accept. It was a fanaticism. Of course, Prabhupada, as soon as he heard about it, he threw them out. So the Christians are also fanatical. They say Christ is God. I mean, this is a mistake. But Christ was a pure devotee of God, no doubt. So certainly, Srila Prabhupada was a pure devotee. And he was saying also very clearly that he was the Messiah. I can show you why in a conversation book, there was one devotee having trouble, like in 1976. And Prabhupada was very clearly saying, take it from me. I'm the way. You should follow me. I mean, generally a Vaishnava is humble. He'll never say like that. But why Prabhupada was able to say like that? Because he was preaching. At another time, though, on his personal account, I can tell a story. I was giving the sergeant. Prabhupada had just given a lecture in London, the first public lecture. And many people came, maybe 300, 400 people, mostly Hindus. And they were not very submissive. They were challenging and... And one guy interrupted, he stood up, what about Shiva? And something, like it was, Prabhupada had to be very forceful. And he told this guy, sit down, you are nonsense. In big auditorium, hundreds of people. And we were just looking, this is like 1969, we were 1 year devotees. And we think, wow, Prabhupada's like a lion, I was so inspired. So that next day I was giving massage and I was thinking, there was a series of lectures, so we had to again speak. So I was like the trainer, getting the prize fighter ready for the next knockout performance or whatever. So I was massaging and talking, I was talking, and Prabhupada was usually quiet when he took massage. He was very quiet sitting there. And then talking, kind of like, you and me, Prabhupada, we'll take over the world. That was like, I was going to be his manager or something. So I was talking like that. And suddenly Prabhupada said, no! I mean, really authoritative. He cut right through my BS. And he said, with another voice, only this voice was, it wasn't so authoritative, it was just like a young 6-year-old, 7-year-old boy. And this voice came right from his heart. And he said, I am just a humble servant. I mean, that's really what he thought of himself. He wasn't thinking, I'm a big master, I'm a big, I'm even thinking that, because that's such a nonsense. But he was thinking that he's just a humble servant. So it was a very good lesson for me. I became, by his mercy, a little bit of my false ego was reduced gradually over the years. But he was without false ego. But on a point of preaching, on a point of saving people, yes, on the way. He was very bold. But on his own account, very humble. So this is the real qualification. Of the devotee, that he's could be hard like a thunderbolt and soft as a rose. So let's read Srila Prabhupada's Prakriya. This verse is particularly applicable to modern society because in modern society there is practically no education in spiritual matters. That's how true, huh? I mean, what, you hear them on the radio sometime or talk to people when you sell a book, because they're lost. They have no idea really what is what, even the basic things, like you're not this body, then nobody understands that. So we have a mission, we should, I was talking about that this morning, we should keep that to that point, that we're missionaries. We may be in America, and this is, America's like a all-pervasive culture, kind of surrounds you, and like an amoeba, and then swallows you up, right, and digests you. But we can't allow that to happen. We may be here, but we have to be like, we're in the belly of the beast. We have to keep, just like Krishna was in the Agasura, wasn't it? He came out with the... So we have to come out. We have to keep this mission. This is the point. If we keep that in the front, that we have a mission. First of all, we have to save ourselves. This is the two tracks. The train is running on two tracks. The first thing, we have to qualify. It means we have to follow. We have to get out. We have to chant Hare Krishna. And the second point is, we have to witness to others. This is the need. People are suffering. You should have a little compassion. And don't get caught up in their enjoying spirit, but see that actually, what Bhaktivinoda says, alas for those who spend their days in festive mirth and joy. The dazzling, deadly liquid forms their hearts for air employ. The shining bottles charm their eyes and draw their hearts' embrace. The slaves of wine can never rise from what we call disgrace. So it's a disgrace. I mean, they're missing their opportunity, human form of life, and they're running after women, wine, or whatever. Well, what do they do? Baseball, football. What are people into? It's not into God. I mean, even if they come to the church, it's some kind of sub-religious idea. Anyway, try to keep this in the front, that we have a mission. Prabhupada has given, entrusted us with this. And he did. He really expected us to take it up and to make the, you know, this, keep up the fight, so to speak. There's some fight, sure. We have to fight with our lower nature. We have to fight with the atheists who may oppose us. But that's a noble fight. That fight will purify us, just like the gold in the fire. It becomes purified by that ordeal. So don't shrink from this kind of fight. It's the thing that will save us and save others. Some of the people may appear to be atheistic or agnostic or philosophical, but actually there is no knowledge of philosophy. As for the common man, if he is a good soul, then there is a chance for advancement by hearing. So this is our qualification. What are we? We're only common men. That's a fact. I mean, that's not even common men. I remember when Prabhupada spoke to me like that, you know, about, no, I am simply humble, sir. I was thinking to myself, God, I'm such a plebeian, and he's such an aristocrat, that by ordinary calculation, I shouldn't even be allowed to be in the same room with this person. He's such a high-class person. And we're just ordinary people, right? Prabhupada picked us up. We're just ordinary people. What is our qualification? But here is the qualification. If we hear, not very difficult. You don't have to go and, you know, do exercise, stand on your head, go to the Himalayas or whatever. Just have to hear. Then, what does he say? There's a chance for advancement by hearing. This hearing process is very important. Lord Chaitanya, who preached Krishna consciousness in the modern world, gave great stress to hearing, because if the common man simply hears from authoritative sources, he can progress. Especially, according to Lord Chaitanya, if he hears the transcendental vibration. What is that transcendental vibration?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So this is why Srila Prabhupada emphasized this chanting, and why he also emphasized the book distribution and publication and production and so on. Because people can hear. So many books are there. How many people are now sitting somewhere on this planet and reading Prabhupada's books? So that's the form of hearing. Very important. And simply by being a little simple and hearing, we can make progress. So, the process is not very difficult. That's the point. You don't have to be like Dhruva Maharaj and stand on one leg and eat only leaves or something. Just simply have to come together like this and agree to hear. But that hearing should be done, you know, in a proper way. There should be submission a little bit. We're not just challenging, you know. And we're hearing, we're trying to understand. Some submission and some inquiry. Naturally, some doubts will come. Well, he's saying this and that. But that's also the qualification of the good disciple. We have to inquire so that the doubts can be removed. And then some service attitude. That's our natural position, to serve, like Prabhupada was saying. I'm simply a humble servant. That wasn't artificial. He's really thinking of himself as a servant. He's a servant, wait, because he's remembering his spiritual master in Krishna. So naturally, we're all servants. So that qualification we should have. A little submission to hear, a little service attitude, and some inquiry. It is stated, therefore, that all men should take advantage, and women, of hearing from realized souls, and gradually become able to understand everything. Everything. We can understand everything if we hear from the right source regularly. The worship of the Supreme Lord will then undoubtedly take place. Lord Chaitanya said that in this age, no one needs to change his position, but one should give up the endeavor to understand the Absolute Truth by speculative reasoning. This is the disease, right? All the big professors and not only the intellectual class, everyone, they speculate about what is what. So this is our tendency. I was coming from the university when Prabhupada picked us up. So everybody has to have a different idea, right? The philosophy teacher, he can't be the same philosophy teacher as another philosophy teacher. He has to have his own signature there, his own twist of what is what. Nobody wants to be a student of Spinoza or somebody. They want to be their own philosophers, right? And so they always add something and subtract something. So this is the tendency. Therefore, we have to give up the tendency and take it, Bhagavad Gita, as it is. It's not so ambiguous. It's clear. If we're a little simple, or a little good, Robert says, a good soul, he can understand simply by hearing. One should learn to become the servant of those who are in knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So this requires a little expertise, especially nowadays. Well, I don't know. I mean, servant of those, let's repeat that. One should learn to become the servant of those who are in knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So how do we know who's in knowledge of the Supreme Lord? There's so many, even in our Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we're saying, yeah, I have this knowledge, I have the knowledge. And so we have to come up to our faith. There has to be some faith. We have faith in Srila Prabhupada. That's our platform. We are ISKCONites, or followers of Srila Prabhupada. So we say, yes, our faith is that Srila Prabhupada was specially empowered by his spiritual master, by Krishna, Shaktivesha Avatar. He was able to do something that others couldn't do. He went on his own. He tried to get cooperation, but he wasn't there. And he didn't get much cooperation even after he demonstrated that he wasn't an ordinary person, that he was able to go all over the world and convert souls in every land. So he gave us a process. He gave us his books. He gave us an organization. He gave us a process, like rising early, samsara prayer, so on. We have a process Prabhupada gave us. So those who are following strictly, then we can feel safe that they're sheltered. Just like Prabhupada was feeling sheltered when I tried to bring him out of his position as a servant and tried to make him a master, he came back and, no, I'm a servant. So that should be the qualification. Who is serving Srila Prabhupada nicely? That should be our calculation if we want to hear from somebody. Because it's true that the books alone are not enough. We should hear and have the subject matter explained. The neophytes are coming. Prabhupada says that the Shastra, this is Shastra. Prabhupada's books are Shastra. But there's also a Guru. We're not Rikviks. We don't think that everybody can just take Prabhupada's books and understand. This is not the system. We have to hear also and have things explained and questioned. So gurus are required. But of course the guru's qualification is that he's always seeing himself as a servant, just like Prabhupada is seeing himself as a servant. Then he can have knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So if we follow such a servant, then we'll also be sheltered. This is the idea, Rampra. It's not something new. Prabhupada didn't come to stop Rampra. He wanted us to be qualified. He wanted all his disciples, boys and girls, he said, you can all know the science of Krishna, and then you can give shelter to others. It doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, with six arms or something to be guru. It's simply you understand the subject and then repeat it. And the subject is not so difficult to understand. What is the difficulty? We're all servants of Krishna. We should please Krishna by following the process that his representative Srila Prabhupada gave us. Cooperate together. That was Prabhupada's instruction. Then somebody who's really living that and preaching that, then we can feel confident that they're rightly situated. So we can also become rightly situated by taking shelter of them. I think we should stop here. Any question on this point? Because it's somewhat controversial in some quarters. The whole idea of Ram Brahma. There's no rhetorics here? Are you?
Yeah. Here we are in ISKCON.
Yeah, we just lost another guru, right?
Yeah, here we are in ISKCON, and it's obvious that, you know, that Ritvik is not the answer, and it's also obvious that some of our gurus have not been qualified. So, you know, where is the solution as to what is the qualification?
The solution is here in Prabhupada's books. If you want to know what is a guru, you should go to Prabhupada's books, become very conversant with it, and then measure with that against that person. Well, Prabhupada says, like he says here, this is his line. One should learn to become the servant of those who are in knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So, Is this guru doing that? Is he really a servant of Srila Prabhupada? We know it. Okay, Prabhupada is a is conversant, you know, who knows the absolute truth. So, can I see practically, is that really the mood of my guru? Is he really trying to serve Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's mission? Or is he trying to compete with Prabhupada? So that means our qualification has to be there. We can be cheated, it's true. I remember I was preaching on the street once in the early days, and I met some girl who was a follower of Guru Maharaj Ji. And I was trying to, you know, preach to her a little bit, and I could see that she was being cheated. And, you know, I thought that was my conviction, that she was being cheated by this guy. So I told her the story how Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, in this world, there's two classes of people, the cheaters and the cheated. I told her like that. I was trying to bring her above that, you know. And then she became sentimental. She said, oh, I'd much rather be cheated. That there was two classes, the cheaters and the cheated. So people really want to be cheated. What can you do? You know, then the Rajneesh comes. Oh yeah, want to be cheated? Yeah. The same way, you come to Krishna consciousness, you want to be cheated, even in ISKCON. Okay, oh, this guru, he's so handsome. And oh, yeah, so they get cheated. We should do, the real qualification is here. And in order to find out, you have to hear. This is the whole emphasis of this verse and purport. Hearing is so important. So you should hear and then test. It's an important decision, a very important decision. You don't just buy something in a store without seeing if it's qualified. But similarly, you have to qualify. Prabhupada gives the example of the buying diamonds. You have to have some idea, what is a diamond? Otherwise you can be cheated. You buy a glass, oh yeah, this is a wonderful diamond. So you have to know the color, the weight, the quality, the hardness, so many things that make a diamond. Similarly, what makes a guru? So that means the disciple has to qualify himself.
Yeah, but in this case, I mean, the ISKCON organization thought this person was qualified. They didn't think that he was a cheater.
Well, there's two answers to that. The first of all is that the society is not appointing anybody as such. The law is that when the spiritual master leaves the body, any disciple can become guru. That's the disciple success. The law of disciple success. Prabhupada mentions that word law in a letter to Tushta Krishna. So, everybody can become a disciple. I mean, everybody who is a disciple of Prabhupada should become a guru. But because we have an organization, therefore, there's some board, like the GBC, who will say, okay, we have no objection if this person becomes a guru. But maybe this person we have an objection because, you know, last week they were having illicit sex in public, or, you know, something. So we don't want to tarnish the institution. So there's some no objection clause that there has to be following for so long and so on. So it's not really that they're telling it, yeah, this person, you still have to find, you are the disciple, you have to find out, you have to, you know, scrutinizingly study. That's the system, that's the Prabhupada system. And therefore it's recommended in the traditional sense that you live with the spiritual master for some time. And he has to also test you to see if you're a bona fide disciple. Otherwise he can be guilty of the eighth offense. Is it ninth offense?
Ninth
offense, instructing the faithless. And if he takes such faithless people as disciples just for name or fame or because they're big or something, then he can be brought down by such disciples. That's also mentioned in that same. And Bhakti Vinod says in the Harinam Chintamani that if the guru does accept the disciple who's not qualified, and he sees it later on that this person, then he should go into a public assembly of Vaishnavas and say, please forgive me, I initiated this person, but it was a mistake. And I would like to make it clear that he is no longer as connected. So, because otherwise he can also go down. So both have to take it seriously. The guru has to take it seriously, and the disciple has to take it seriously. The institution is just kind of on the side. It's not that the GBC is the parampara. Because the GBC is an institution. It's a personal thing. The GBC has some authority over the guru. Because why? Because Prabhupada wanted that. And if we're really bona fide disciples, then we have to do what the spiritual master wanted. So the spiritual master wanted us to cooperate with the institution.
Recently I was reading in the Ashurash Upanishad purport. I don't remember the exact quote, but it stuck in my mind, it was a couple of months ago, that Prabhupada was indicating that even someone who's a teacher in spiritual life, even he may engage in some mundane activity, have some fall down, but these things happen and they can still be considered, one can still receive knowledge from them.
Yeah, but there's also a time when it's proper to reject. So that's the other part of the answer. You say if somebody gets a cheating guru, then he should, the advice given is he should keep some distance and to see if this person is really, you know, addicted to sense gratification again, or become, you know, fallen. It can't guide me. And then after he's convinced, after some time of watching and waiting, maybe some years even, then he's advised that he should find another.
But my point is, though, that not all of these cases are the same, and yeah. We can't just, you know, paint it all with one broad stroke. And so, isn't there scope then for some of these individuals, considering Prabhupada in mind, that he would want some rectification for those persons who had that responsibility, made some mistakes, became overwhelmed, mm-hmm. and then they've sincerely.
So that again is a disciple's decision. If the guru is saying, I'm releasing you, I'm not fit to be your spiritual master, then the disciple has to decide. The recommendation can be there. You know, I just have one sentence. Let me finish this purport and then we'll go to questions and answers. In this verse particularly, the process of hearing is strongly recommended, and this is very appropriate. Although the common man is often not as capable as the so-called philosophers, faithful hearing from an authoritative person will help one transcend this material existence and go back to Godhead, back to home. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah. Yeah.
Comment?
It's a comment question, thinking out loud all at once. Regarding this point of qualification, it seems like there is a fine... First off, it seems that for a new person, and all of us are new when it comes to neophyte, when it comes to Krishna consciousness, And to make that kind of decision, that lifelong commitment, I'm seeing now, I've been reading Prabhupada's books for 30 years, and I'm seeing now that, you know, I'm maybe understanding a little bit of what he's saying. So here I am 30 years later, what to speak of a person who's just coming, just starting to read Prabhupada's books, and to make that kind of distinction between who is qualified and who is not qualified seems to me an almost impossible task. And then you have the institution, which kind of, and I've seen it, and I think we've all seen it, that kind of rubber stamps, as you said, the law of the civic succession is that if your spiritual master leaves the planet, you can initiate. And then you have the kind of rubber stamping of a person, and you can initiate, and then later on it may prove that person is not qualified. But due to the sanctioning, which I understand is necessary to some degree, due to the sanctioning that things, symptoms of maybe disqualification for assuming that responsibility are there, but because of the sanctioning of the greater institution, it may be dismissed as, in the most far out extreme leela. And in more realistic, well, you know, this person, we may not understand the character or the nature of this person, and therefore we don't want to criticize, or we don't want to bring this to light, or whatever the case may be. I just find it hard. I mean, this is a, like I said, I am thinking out loud, so I hope I'm not rambling too much or losing people. But I've been thinking a lot about how is it, you know, especially in recent days, when another friend of ours has reneged on their responsibility. How is it that we have all of this knowledge that Srila Prabhupada has given us, and we have historically all kinds of examples of symptoms that are manifest and personalities? How is it as an organization, how can we come to the point where we can, without being operatis or discourteous or whatever, how can we actually use what we have in terms of knowledge, history,
etc.? You mean to catch a guru before he falls or something?
Yeah, I mean, especially a good doctor will see a symptom and say, this is a symptom. I've heard yukta about it, you know, in terms of, and I'm not getting on the sannyas ashram, believe me, but because someone who takes sannyas is actually the guru of all the varnas and ashrams, it seems, and because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself has given such stringent codes for the behavior of sannyas, but we've seen in the past the principle of yukta vairag, for instance, be totally misapplied, and thus money and...
So what's the solution?
Well, the only solution that I can come upon, and I don't even know if it is a solution, you know, that we have recognition of symptomatic behavior, which means influenced by the modes of material nature. Mm-hmm. And why is it, or how is it, that we cannot, while we are recognizing those symptoms, just as an organization say, you've got to take time out.
I think there's been the cases in the past when we have done that. Where individuals,
it's a delicate thing, right?
Yeah, it's very delicate, and then you find yourself in, like you said, you know, almost like where you feel like, you know, but if you keep speaking in this way, you're committing some offense.
Because especially, I'll give you an example, like with Hari Kesh. He had so many disciples, and they were really, and he was doing so much, but many of us knew he was in trouble. But you couldn't, you know, on a personal level, he was very rude, he would drive you away. If you went to him as a friend, as a brother, he would be insulting and, you know, dismissive. And he was doing so much, and so many books, and so many temples, and so much money, and he was a... And his disciples were, some of them were fanatical. And if, you know, if you even hinted that there was envious godbrothers, right, you know, like Guru Maharaj, mm-hmm, and, you know, that could have easily killed us. If we took up the, you know, strongly said, this guy's in my, we want to get him, we want to straighten him out, we're going to take this position away from you, we're going to tell you you have to chant 64 rounds and go here. He would have fought, he would have said, you know, and he would have just broke off with all his disciples and had a separate movement. And, I mean, practically, I was right on top of that whole thing. But there was actually, it was really very little you could do. It was almost like you had to let Krishna do the whole thing, because otherwise it would have been blood.
But there have been attempts in the past when you approach certain gurus,
yeah,
and try to do something in private, and their reaction would be, you know, as he's mentioning, you know.
Well, but this lady had it.
Oh, no, let me finish. Go ahead, because I'm just going to throw another log on the fire.
No, I was finished, basically.
Oh, okay. Because I know the last was, you were talking about a timeout, or like reassess your ashram, right? Isn't that what
an assessment was attempted, and then it was just like totally thrown out, like
with the
impartial, you know.
The problem is who will judge, you know? If you're going to say, yeah, I'm going to judge all the gurus in ISKCON, and then, well, wait a minute, what is your qualification? That means you're the guru of the gurus.
No, but...
Why don't we make you the acharya?
No, but I think my point is that if we have all... I mean, part of having this knowledge is to be able to implement it, you know, to practice. I mean, it's very difficult institutionally, but still, I mean, you read so many things about sannyas ashram, you read so many things about if one says that they're guru, they're now garu, you know, the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the point that you were making. I was reading in Raghunath Das Goswami's Mana Shiksha, he talks about deceit, and he talks about the nirapeksha devotee, the sadhaka, who's the renunciate, and as soon as that renunciate thinks that he's...
So what practically? Okay, so it's true, we can see, but then how do you implement that?
Well, my point is that if we take a... first off, if we set up a kind of systematic approach, just like in any good corporation, if an employee breaks the rules, they're not thrown out. In a good corporation, a well-structured corporation, they're not thrown out, they're not publicly reprimanded, they have a meeting, it is, you know, a verbal. And after a verbal, it is a written. And then after, there's like three writtens before finally the person can be terminated.
You know, and actually in the Old Testament there's a, or no, actually it's in the New Testament, I think it's in Matthew or Luke, it says, in a community, a spiritual community, you approach, you see that they're committing some mistake or sin. So you approach them first privately. Then the second stage is you approach them, if they don't respond to that, you approach them with a few other people who are peers. And then if they still don't, then you do it publicly, in a public forum, in front of the entire community, and you call them out on this point.
I can't speak specifically, but...
I like that, but...
That's, I think, in Matthew or Luke, I just recently, someone showed that to me.
I think in many instances, we've become very passive-aggressive, in one sense, that we don't have a structure like this, where in genuine concern, heartfelt concern, we go with straw in our teeth. Not that we go, like a group, an intimidating group, one or two, who may be very close to that individual. I know what you're saying. I know.
There's politics. There's envy.
Well, that to me, in and of itself, if someone's displaying that, then that's their disqualification.
No, but then they'll say, you want to judge me because you're envious of me, because I'm doing, like, that's what Hare Krishna was coming across like that.
Well, I can give other examples. Like, when I was in Vancouver, well, one of the first things Prabhupada always told us was that Brahmacharya Sannyasi wants to be alone. That's not a very good sign, generally speaking. And Jagadish was wanting to be alone all the time, and I kept trying to tell everyone, there's something wrong. We need to help him. Mm-hmm. There's the problem here. And no, you don't know what you're talking about. And similarly with the Bhavananda thing.
Yeah, there's so many examples you have, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've sat in the GBC meetings over the years, and I've seen that, you know, problem cases come up and deal with them, and like you said, they talk and they have subcommittees, and I mean, sometimes that's why people say organized religion stinks, right? There's some truth to that. Because real religion is between you and God. Well, we've tried to organize because Prabhupada told us, but don't expect utopian. I mean, there's a famous letter that Prabhupada wrote to Treya Rishi in the early 1972. He was a puck of businessman. Alan, what was the name of the company? Arthur Young, accounting. And he came to the New York Temple and he said, this place is a zoo. You know, it's not being managed like you said, the way it should be, like an organization does, that he was familiar with. And he wrote a letter to Prabhupada like that, and Prabhupada answered that, but don't be utopian. In the spiritual world, it also looks like there's a mistake, but you should try to see that these people are giving their, you know, they're surrendering and they're trying their best. And in other words, it's not a perfect analogy to say like an IBM would do it like this, because it's just not. It's a voluntary society, and you know, nobody's getting paid. It's not even like in a church, an ordinary church, they paid a pastor. You go to open a church in the Lutheran church or something, the pastor gets a good salary. This guy doesn't give anybody anything. So it's not, we don't have that much control over these people that we're going to tell them, you know, well, we want to know there, we want this. And they'll say, well, you know, don't bother me. Because Prabhupada did make it, in a sense, not too centralized. He made each temple with some autonomy. And the temple president has some authority there. And even the GBC can't come and say, well, you should do this, you should do that. So why did Prabhupada do that? Because he didn't want the whole thing to fall down, at least. That's the idea. Whereas we centralize it too much and we start saying, okay, now this is what we're going to do. You're going to have to do this, you're going to have to do that. It means that there's a central power in Mayapur or wherever with a real strong stick, and it's going to club you if you don't abide. But that also can be dangerous.
Maybe we should look at it a different way. Maybe we're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
maybe Prabhupada saw that, you know, that the tendency in with imperfect living beings, human beings, to make a lot of mistakes. So you decentralize the mistakes, yeah, and you figure it in general, you're going to muddle through, and each person who's sincere is going to find somebody, some other person,
right,
to help them, to guide them. And
it kind of probably said, until the self-effulgent acharya emerges, because without that, you know, the committee is not going to be perfect. You're going to have a three-man committee who's going to say, get on whoever's case is there, right?
So
because they're not perfect, yeah, then the other guy's going to say, well, wait, you know, you're coming to me to tell me what to do, but I know that you did. And it's like, it's not the same as when Prabhupada would cut, like when Prabhupada cut me like that and said, no, I could accept it because I had faith that he was perfect. But who has faith in anyone, you know, especially brothers? Who has faith that you're going to come and sit on and you're going to tell me, you're going to dictate to me that I have to do it? You can advise me. We can go and say, please, Prabhu, you know, we see that there's some danger, like we did with Jagadish, but if they don't, you know, it's very difficult to force. Because then you lose the voluntary nature of the society. It's voluntary. Yes, Mataji.
The opposite of forcing is to not give too much adulation and distinction.
That's good.
And I think that's where part of the problem is. I mean, that's why Hare Krishna couldn't accept, because he was being adored by his fans. And so it's an unreal world that people were put in, and that's partly due to everybody's fault, not just the person involved.
Well, it's everybody's fault. You can also say it's
everybody's.
It's also, you can say, it's the philosophy's fault. But you can't say that, right? Because the philosophy says the guru is representative of God. You should treat him, you know, you shouldn't treat him as an ordinary man. Yes.
Well, I was just reading a Ray of Vishnu sometime yesterday, because I just opened up to the page.
What's your name, by the way?
Eka Budi.
Okay.
And Bhaktisiddhanta was talking somewhere, I'm not sure exactly, but he's going on about how important it is to think of Gurudev. It's like the beginning of your class, actually, which I was thinking. It was just exactly like that. That always remember that it is because due to Gurudev's mercy that you're able to do anything. And that's what happened, what we were lacking with the Gurus. The Bhagavan did it as an example years ago. He gave a class one day about how you should always like the Guru is everything. You should always just remember that Guru does everything for you. You worship the Guru, and everything will be taken care of. And I was thinking, and he's just saying going on and on about how you know they're looking about the Guru, and I was thinking, oh, how nice he's talking about Prabhupada. And it wasn't until I'm so slow, it was like 24, 48 hours later, I realized, he's a guru now. He's talking about himself.
But hopefully, if he was rightly situated, he would be talking about Prabhupada, because that's his guru.
He wasn't saying Prabhupada that much, so it hit me a couple of days later.
Yeah, but that's really our philosophy, that, you know, it's there's some danger, in, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta also says, yeah, the nature of religion is this great scope of mischief. Just inherent in religion. And we've seen what are the Muslims doing now, running into the trade center with their planes in the name of Allah? You know, they really believe it. They have to believe it, otherwise how can they do it, commit suicide?
Well, there's also a Hindu faction now that's like...
Yeah, I mean, in the name of religion, there's a lot of scope for mischief. That's the bottom line. And therefore, we have to qualify ourselves to make sure that this person really is representing his guru before he starts telling me about how important the guru is. We have to see who he's talking about. And if we detect, like you did 2 days later, then you should immediately understand, this guy's cheating. He's putting himself in the center instead of putting in his guru and Krishna in the center. And a real guru will never do that.
But I mean, I'm not saying that that wasn't happening then, but I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I just, you know, I'm not making excuses, but these individuals were doing something for the first time after Prabhupada left, and there was still a state of sort of shock for others. So they obviously made mistakes, and it's easy for us sitting outside looking in, you know, to say, oh, well, they should have done this, they should have done that. And maybe we even made some suggestions. But the point is that I still think we need to be compassionate, because I don't think that they were innate, you know, they were purposely, consciously trying to, you know, I really don't believe that.
if you read over, if you really study the purport to the Abominable Acts clause, if it's done over and over, if it's covered up,
yeah,
you know, if it's denied,
of course,
then you that clause no longer is valid, and you should.
I agree with you. It's not so innocent when it's done, when it's knowingly done with premeditation and plans and how to keep themselves covered. And even when they're exposed, they still protest, oh, I'm innocent, like with Bhavananda.
Right.
I mean, we caught him, and still he was lying to us. He was emotion, oh, I didn't do it. He was personally talking to me like that. And he was guilty as hell. But then how can you say, oh, he's innocent? I mean, okay, you can say he's caught up. We can forget, okay, he went over the top, you know, he got carried away. But at least come to the point and say, listen, he has to rectify, repent. Really repent from his heart and say, I'm a bigger sinner. Look what I did. I spoiled so many people's lives. I led them astray. If he comes really, fully, completely around and falls at everybody's feet, then he can be accepted. But
I haven't seen
any of them do that. Even Hansa Duda. I was with him recently. It's very hard for them because Bhagavad Gita said, one who stays in honor, dishonor is worse than death. They have to come back as the pot scrubber. Yes, Prabhu?
Well, I was just... thinking that we're talking about gurus in their already fallen condition. One's already fallen, then naturally the good qualities are not there. But whenever I hear a discussion like this, somehow I feel a little pain in the heart that, you know, that maybe the good qualities, that the great service that some of these God brothers have done, we're forgetting about. And
also, Bhagavad Gita, I like to know,
what's the follow point? I mean, Krishna doesn't forget.
But right. You start from the point
of and Prabhupada won't forget. I mean, Prabhupada's their spiritual master. We can't take Prabhupada's position and say, and Prabhupada could do that, like with one guy who's caught having even a child molestation, and Prabhupada protected him. But we can't do that, you know. We can't imitate Prabhupada, because that was his position. He was their spiritual master. He may adjust things. But if we come in and say, okay, now, you know, then we get caught up in this whole thing. I mean, we should have been more open with this child, you know. Now we're seeing that was a mistake. we should have been more alarmed about it, rather than say, oh, well, you know, he's Apichet Pasudaracharo. He may have molested his child, but he's still all right, or he molested all these women. Yes, Rathaji.
Well, I was just wondering, from comments that I have heard from different sannyasis, it seems to me, I have gathered, that it can be very lonesome, that people, maybe there is not such a cohesive...
Lonesome at the top.
Yes, yes, not such a cohesive environment. Yeah. I don't know whether there is maybe a lack of friendships,
Or
maybe lack of affection.
Yeah, therefore we should work together. I mean, the Prabhupada told us, you show your love how you cooperate, work together. So, what's checking them? Let's work together. I mean,
because it is through affection that one can actually cultivate other person's qualities, encourage other person to move forward. Through affection that one can actually instruct or correct, and it's accepted. But yeah, if there is some such independence among all the different members of the top, then...
At the bottom, at the top, at every step, we have independence. That's our constitutional position. We have some independence. Even the associate of Lord Chaitanya, Krishnadas Kavi, Krishnadas, what was it?
Kali
Krishnadas, was traveling with Lord Chaitanya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he got in Maya. So we can't, you know, we can't say, well, we're going to... Everybody has independence. We can offer them, yeah, please, why don't we cooperate, why don't we work together? Like, there were some suggestions that the sannyasis can... have seminars and so, but my experience is the ones that need it most, they won't come.
Well, my point is that we're trying to learn how to develop bhakti, and so we have to practice here and now.
Yeah, therefore we should work together and here and now. That's a good point.
But I have a philosophical point here about what you just said about the that they have to come back as pot washers, because I mean that may be that what they if they actually repent, maybe that's what they would want to do, but that's not what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. He says that you start from the point you left off at, that nothing is lost, everything is maintained, and it's not that, you know, there's the atonement is to be re-engaged. And I'd like
so we're going to put Vlad on the back?
No, I'd like to clarify. My point is, I was talking about the institution of guru. I wasn't talking about falling down. I mean, his fall downs were one thing. I was talking about how they tried to be gurus at that time. Obviously, they imitated Prabhupada rather than... They started off...
Imitation.
When I first joined the movement, there was no daily guru puja. That came about gradually as we... But they started at the point where Prabhupada had left off at. So I'm talking about how I'm saying that I think that innocently they thought this is the way to be a guru. And because we had no
experience. So those who were innocent, then Krishna would have protected them.
Started innocent, but yeah, after a while you learn how to do it.
Exactly, so some have made adjustments, that's my point.
Well, I'm feeling like your question or statement is part of the dichotomy here. You're saying that to be... They were big gurus, they had lots of disciples, and then if they're in a devotee pot washer, the next life, that's like a lessening. If they're like really...
No, I said they may want to do like that. They may want to feel... I'm talking about in this lifetime. I'm not talking about... hopefully within this
lifetime. But who's coming in this lifetime? Is there anybody knocking on the door and say, you know, let me...
I don't know, but it's not over yet, is it?
No, but I'm saying that... I think that if somebody comes in the right mood, then he'll be welcome. I really believe that.
And that's what I'm trying to stress here.
What's the right mood?
The right mood is to be humble. Mm-hmm.
That nothing is held against
you. That's true. That's the right mood for any devotee
on any level. But as soon as somebody deals with you that way, your heart goes out to them.
Wouldn't that be a great service for Prabhupada?
Everybody's done service to Prabhupada. Why do we...
No, I'm saying, but wouldn't that please Prabhupada if that person actually was able to rectify in this lifetime?
And maybe I was talking to Pragosha, God brother, the book. And let's go and talk to Ramasha. Why don't we together? Maybe we can, you know, pop him a little bit or something. Yeah, let's do it. I'm open to try to help some of them who've got, you know. But
if they
have to be practical, when you go and you know, they say, listen, one big sannyasi I know. He said, I'll meet with the GVC if they come and have a drink with me. So
well, you know, it's,
if they sit down and have cocktails with me, then I'll talk to them. Whatever. So then, what can you do? You know, yes.
Well, just on a practical observation in this context, I saw Bhavananda recently on the Memory series, and he presented himself very humbly and very kind of repentfully lamenting, you know, what had happened.
So he may be connected with this guy here in Australia.
Yeah, he is, but
and also years ago, I saw.